And leading the session is someone, I don't know where we've, you know, someone we've never heard from before, Vaughan Bennison. There are lots of good things we can say about Vaughan, and certainly welcome him as the president of BCA, but also an expert in and of emerging technology. Thank you, Vaughan and panel.
Thanks. I wouldn't call myself an expert in emerging technology, but what I am is an early adopter and somebody who likes to play with stuff. But we do have some experts joining us, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Mick, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Mick Curran. I am an executive director and technical consultant at NV Access. I suppose people probably know that I was a co-creator of the MVDA screen reader back in 2006 and still going strong, but these days focusing more just on the consulting side of things, as I'm trying to wing in other people to do the day-to-day organisation stuff, which is going well. But and over the last few years been starting to learn a lot about all these new emerging technologies, AI and the like, and how they can not only help us at NV Access and NVDA, but also how they will help blind people in general across the community.
Thanks, Mick. And just to my left is somebody who nobody's ever heard of. Do you want to introduce yourself? Oh, he's to my right.
There we go. I am Jonathan Craig. I now work as Policy and Advocacy Manager for Vision 2020. But as a small child, I had a toy robot called 2XL. I don't know if anyone else has encountered the wonders of 2XL, but it was basically using four-track tape to imitate a robot that could, it would ask you questions and you could answer, incorrectly or incorrectly with four buttons on the front of 2XL, the cute robot, with a very heavy Brooklyn accent. And so that is my expertise in AI.
That's why we've asked Jonathan.
Yes, that's why I'm here.
And that's why we've asked Jonathan to be a part of this session today. AI comes in many forms, as we all know by now, and there was a comment made, which if we have time, I'd like to address in this discussion about yesterday about AI being used in recruitment and what that might mean for disabled people and, of course, in this case, blind and vision impaired people. But let's firstly talk about the different types of AI. There's AI that we can use on our desktops and our computers. There's AI we can use on virtual assistants and things like that. There's AI that has been designed and, I guess, shunted into use for visual assistance and interpretation and things like that. And there's AI that is really designed around safety and public use. And I'm thinking, when I think of that, AI that might be included, for example, in automobiles or transport vehicles or government systems and things like that. So there's a whole lot of different types of AI, and firstly I'd like to briefly talk about or explore the visual assistance. Jonathan, I'll start with you. Do you use AI for visual interpretation and things like that, and what is your favourite of all of the AI assistants that are available to blind people now?
I'm back. I was recently probably the second last person to buy Meta glasses, which I feel like should be giving us some sponsorship for this convention because of the number of them that are here. Meta AI is not my favourite visual interpretation AI. It will get better, but for example, with seeing AI, if you put something in upside down, it will correct it for you, whereas Meta will say something of the like, oh, I, this isn't in any of the languages that I support, and then it will list them all laboriously. I was once, like, repeatedly asking Meta to read a document to me, and it got sassy with me. It was like, it's easier to go paperless. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up, Meta. they can be incredibly useful. And I think one of the biggest problems is actually that, for example, Meta, I think they had no idea that blind people would be a major user base. And I think they're only just realizing and starting to grapple with the implications of that now, whereas things like Seeing AI, Be My AI, they are trained somewhat better for the specific use case.
Mick, I'm interested to explore with you what's been your experience using those sorts of virtual assistants and visual interpretation.
Oh, I think we've seen it definitely improve and change over the years. I myself rely on I have a host of different tools, but definitely Seeing AI is one of my biggest ones, especially when I'm just out and about on my phone. But I'm increasingly using ChatGPT more and more as well, though you probably need to work at it a little bit harder, understand more what to ask. But I think it's definitely changed our lives. Has definitely changed my life and made me a lot more independent. But it really, though, is about how you use them. And we need to be very careful not to just assume that these AIs will just do exactly what we think they will, what we expect them to do out of the box. You really need to know how to use the tool, because they really don't have a lot of context around what you're asking. You know, you might just say, read this or whatever, but you might already know you're, in a bank or a fire station or something, you know what I mean? And there is things in your head, and so it will make assumptions, you will make assumptions. And so it's really important for you to be able to give the AI as much context as possible so that it can answer you in the best way possible.
Yeah, and to lighten the mood just before lunch, I'd like to take a couple of minutes just to talk about our worst AI fails, because they're always amusing, and some of the stories you hear are quite funny. But let's talk a little bit about AI in terms of its use as we would use it as blind and vision impaired people, but in the same way that everyone else uses it. And I'm thinking about things like ChatGPT and Copilot and things like that we use in the workplace as well as for personal use. Jonathan, have you used those, and what have you used them for, and how's it gone?
Yeah, in terms of general use cases, although I think that there was still a visual element to this, I was recently needing to buy a new laptop, and I got ChatGPT to compare and create tables of various elements of a few models that I was considering, not least including the dimensions, because I was obsessed with the idea of fitting it into the laptop bag that I had, which, people have priorities. You can't help them sometimes. And I do think ChatGPT as well got a little bit sassy with me, because it really felt that I was choosing heading towards the wrong laptop choice. But then it was nice to me when I explained why. So I think it can be quite useful for that, for things like that, for building a data set. But then I also found that it frequently made mistakes even in that. You had to be very specific with it about the model generation and things like that, or you would talk about laptops from several years earlier, which were very different from the one that I was actually looking for.
And I think that's a really good point, because often we will use these things to get a description of things. And before we go to Mick, I'll just tell you briefly a little story. Most of you will know that I'm a record collector, and I also collect vintage audio equipment. And a little while ago, there was a bulk lot of records that came up on eBay that I thought was very interested in. And I thought, I'll have a look at this, But there was no description as to exactly what they all were. But there were images. So I was able to use Be My AI to scan the images with varying degrees of success, but I was able to get enough information to know exactly what all of the records in the lot were. And I was thinking to myself, even 12 months ago, I would have just had to ignore that lot of records, and it was actually a really good price, and I ended up getting an absolute bargain. So, you know, we often use it to describe things because, as all of you here will know, that when you shop online, if you haven't seen something first physically, you really don't know exactly what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. Unless you have someone who you trust who can describe it. But AI is starting to increasingly do that. And these are just the normal AIs, not specifically tailored AIs to some extent. Mick, what's been your experience in those areas?
Accuracy is increasing, but there still can be some very dangerous things that can occur. I think what I'd like to at least quickly mention is just to really make sure that everyone understands that at the end of the day, these are still, even the image description kind of AIs and stuff, these are still what we call large language models, which are simply just programs that auto-complete what is being given to it. As in, you give it half a sentence, it'll complete the sentence based on statistical, likelihood. That is all, and these AIs that we use, at least these days, the LLMs, that is all they are. And, you know, there's no extra logic behind the scenes or anything. They're very, very, very good at it because they've been trained on millions, billions of bits of information, but that is all they are. And so, therefore, it is not a 0% chance that they will get it wrong or that they will hallucinate. Or you'll just get completely the wrong answer, and so you have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think that's the other point I would make to that is that they never argue with you, which I think is a little bit challenging, because if you immediately challenge them on something, they just go, oh yeah, you're right, sorry. And you know, one of the things that often happens when we work with a sighted person and they tell us something, and you go, oh, but I thought it was such and such, they go, well, actually, no, it's not. It really is blue, you know, I'm not lying to you. But the AI doesn't do that. And so if you think you know something, sometimes it's better, you're better off not telling it or not even asking the question.
Yeah.
And when you hear about my most recent AI fail, you'll know exactly what I was talking about. What about using AI in the workplace? So a lot of people are finding that they're receiving emails or they're receiving communications from businesses, or that they work for an organisation that uses AI in terms of customer-facing roles. And some of us, of course, use AI to write letters and write marketing stuff. Jonathan, have you used any AI in terms of your work?
No. I am a writer by trade, and I enjoy writing, and I think that because AI is predictive text, it always moves you toward the norm. So I find that the writing that AI delivers is very functional, and it can be useful in that way, but it is not original or memorable. And one could argue that in the corporate world, where we're always looping back and moving forward, sometimes you can't tell the difference between humans and robots. You know, would half of the people writing emails these days actually pass the Turing test? I'm not sure, but I think I am always very insistent on writing all of my own material, and I think that my emails are more remembered as a result, and I think that using predictive text as a writing tool doesn't acknowledge the complexity of that actual real information delivery requires, and changing people's opinions requires. But then, you know, I would say that because I want my career.
Well, we certainly can't argue with that. Mick, have you had any experience in the workplace with the use of AI?
Yeah, I use AI each and every day in the workplace. I use it as a coding assistant. So for you know, where we're doing like complex code changes or trying to prototype new things, more and more we will use AI to generate some of that code. I want to be very clear, though, that we only ever use code that we fully understand. So yes, it might generate some code for us, but unless we understand every line of that code, it's definitely not going in. And that should be exactly the same as whether I had, you know, a junior developer, a junior programmer or something I've brought on and working with me. That would be exactly the same thing that I would do. They might do some coding, but unless I fully understand it, it's not going in. The second thing, yeah, I have from time to time used AI to help me write emails and letters, not so much because I don't do a lot of large correspondence like that, but sometimes for some very, very difficult community conversations. For instance, the NVDA community is a very large, very passionate community, and sometimes there's some very complicated issues that go on that deal with a lot of different threads. And so sometimes might get the AI to do some summaries for me or sort of template out a bit of a response. But again, unless, you know, I still read it from top to bottom, absolutely, change probably 60% of it. But it just gives me a little bit of a scaffold, that little bit of extra confidence, or at least, you know, just at least to get started. So they're really the main ways, I would say, that I use AI. The one thing I will point out is where I don't use AI at this point in time is for like OCR, optical character recognition, especially around like reading legal documents. And this is an interesting point because obviously the main reason there is because AI can hallucinate, AI can get things wrong. And if I'm a director of a company, if I used AI to read a legal document and gained a misunderstanding from that and then signed it, that's really not a good thing. It's very dangerous and I could be liable and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, though, I think it's a real struggle for me because times are changing in the sense that as AI gets better and better and better, well, is there really a difference to me then going to some random person, you know, in my organization, even if it is a junior or a family member or something, and have them read the legal document to me? They could make mistakes too. You can't rule that out. And so where do we draw that line? Where does AI become smart enough that we will actually accept? You know, it's exactly the same for image descriptions and other things as well. Right now, I'm not happy enough to just take AI at its word, but I'm not ruling out the day where we might, you know, it just has to get to that threshold where we can't tell the difference between a sighted support worker and an AI. But, you know, we're not there yet, but we have to keep asking that question.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think I'm somewhere in the middle. I've only used AI for writing a couple of times, and each time I've actually thrown out what it's done, but it's given me an idea of where to start. Mm. So the first time was when I wrote my nomination statement for being the president of BCA. And what I did was I fed it my resume and I fed it a couple of other documents and said, okay, write me a nomination statement, and it did, and it was really bad. It was appalling. And I thought, but what it did do was it focused my mind on, okay, these are some things that I could actually focus on. Yeah, I'd forgotten I'd done that, or yeah, I forgot that was important, or whatever. And so then I sat down and rewrote the statement completely. But one of the issues that I've found, and this is particular possibly to screen reader users, I've been asked to vet a couple of documents, and some of them quite important documents, that have been written with the assistance of AI. And I've looked at them, and I usually proofread things in Braille because I'm a bit of a Nazi like that. And I've found US spelling and things like that. And I think we need to be really careful unless we are deliberately moving towards a US-focused written language situation. And I'm personally not in favour of that. But the point is whether or not you want it to be spelt with US spelling and punctuation and things like that, you should be aware of the decision that the AI is making there. Mm. So I don't use AI a lot in the workplace, but just a little bit of a fun story. I recently applied for the role of the Tasmania's Disability Commissioner a few months ago. And when I wrote my application, I submitted it, and then I thought, what would it be like if Charles Dickens wrote this application? So I asked it to do two different copies of my application written in Charles Dickens, and it was amazing, the result that it came up with. It was, I mean, there's no way in the world you could ever use it, but it was certainly gave me 5 minutes worth of a laugh. Jonathan, what do you see as being some of the key aspects of AI that make you excited over the next 5 years or so?
I think that AI is going to become this is the worst it will ever be, and I think it's going to become a lot better. The visual assistant element of it is going to become a lot better. I was mean to the Meta glasses before, and I might be again. Sorry, Mark. When I can have a robot assistant on a video call anytime I want, I think that will be quite incredible. And as in Australia, you have to constantly ask it, to look and describe. Even with that, there was a period a few weeks ago where I was looking through some of my old DVDs that I had never seen in ages, and I thought, let's see if I can do this with Meta. And actually, that was one instance where it really worked well, and I got up such a cracking pace, and I thought to myself, I'm actually really nearly as fast as a sighted person would be doing this same task. And I think that's probably the goalpost, actually. How can we get... How can AI be harnessed to make us as efficient as an equivalent sighted person at doing the same, functional tasks? I think that, to me, is much more interesting than the kind of gimmickry around creativity and so on and so forth.
Mick, what will be your zero point? When will you consider that AI is there?
Oh, that's really hard to answer. I mean, I think I'm already doing it. I'm already using it each and every day, but I'm also sort of keeping, I still have to keep my wits about myself. So I have to double check everything. Mm. I don't know. I mean, this pace, it's so moving so fast. Like, it was in November 2022 when we all got access to GPT-3, and that just absolutely blew my mind, everyone's mind, at the amazing things you could already do back then. And now we're 3 years on almost, and it's amazing. So many different things and much more powerful things we can do now. I think I totally agree with Jonathan more on the visual assistant thing. I think that's where it's going to be. It's going to be extremely meaningful for blind and vision impaired people. It already is, and it's just going to get better and better. But we just need to make sure, though, that we are in control. I think there's two things. One, that we have the skills to actually use it. Like, I always imagine the idea of the blind child going out there and the O&M instructor teaching them to use some AI visual assistant and then it's not working the next day, and what do they do? Or it tells them something incorrect and they didn't learn how to, ask the AI to clarify or to double check. And so there's that thing. But then there's also the making sure that we can still make sure that AI is doing what we need as blind people. And we are a very tiny subset, so I get that we can't expect this, but we just need to keep on top of it, because AI is being eaten right and left by the sighted community for all their workplace tasks and all this real cool stuff. But a lot of it actually is sort of rather scary to us, or doesn't apply to us, because it's so amazing how these companies these days, and I probably hear a bit more than some people just in the circles that I'm in the amount of AI being used internally in the big big tech organizations to do their project, to read their documents, to summarize. You know, they give all their, you know, they give access to all their, you know, Google Drive and all that, and just go, here, cool, write my project for me. You know, I would never imagine doing that. But these people are actually doing this stuff. And that is really scary. And so on one hand, they can do it because they have a bit of a fallback. Like, okay, if it doesn't work out, they'll walk sheepishly to their boss, say sorry, and then go do it manually. We don't necessarily have that choice, right? We can't go back because we're actually using that as our lifeline.
Yes.
So we have very different requirements.
Yes.
I think that's a good point. My question, though, Mick, to you would be, would we ever, do you think, get to a point where I could say to ChatGPT, write me an NVDA add-on to do such and such that gets me out of a hole for the immediate time? Is that close?
We were doing that in November 2022, as I mentioned, with GPT-3, that was one of the first things that I asked, and Jamie, who worked on NVDA with me, also asked, and we were absolutely blown away that it could write a basic NVDA add-on even back then. It got a bit confused. It added some JAWS scripts in there and some fun like that, which didn't make any sense, but it was on the way. And nowadays, yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, but like anything, any AI, there's still going to be mistakes. So maybe for a small task, yeah, and if it works, it works. But it depends on what the risk is. You know, like if it's only for you, say, collating your DVD collection or something like that, cool. If it goes wrong, well, there's not too many ramifications, and most likely it worked and everything's all good. But if you are writing an NVDA add-on or something that's going to be put out there for the public or used in a corporate or something, you'll want to think very carefully about that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I've used AI a few times to do minutes of meetings, and I really find that it struggles with AI struggles with preparing minutes. Have either of you done that?
Yeah.
Seems like there's a few people in the room.
Yeah.
There's people who say that it can be done. I just find that it misses out on so much contextual information about what people are actually talking about it's almost, you know, it seems like it's quicker, but then you're having to read through the whole thing. I think that it can be good for creating, you know, a set of actions, for example, and, having it built into Teams can help you to, like, essentially it can automatically do meeting invites for you based on, you know, a conversation that you had in a Teams meeting. That's sort of simple enough for it to do. It might get better at understanding things, understanding context. At the moment I find that it doesn't really do it for me.
We've got just a couple of minutes and I can hear some stomachs rumbling, so I'd really like to finish on time. But let's talk about our biggest AI fails. Mick, have you got a nice big AI fail you can tell us about?
Oh, look, there's the one I've mentioned before. People have possibly heard it, but taking a photo of my kitchen table, my kitchen, and I had a kid, one of my children, sitting there at the table. It was just us at home, nothing else, no one else. And the reason I took the picture was merely just for fun to see what it would do. But so it explained the table well, explained the kid well, explained exactly what was on the table, the breakfast cereal, all this kind of stuff. Explained that it was a nice sunny day outside, it was very nice about it. And then it said, and there's a car parked just outside the window. There is never a car parked outside my kitchen window. And I was home by myself with this kid, and I'm like, this doesn't sound right. And so I then asked the AI again. I said, well, tell me more about this parked car. And then it said, oh, no, you're right. Actually, no, sorry, there's no parked car. Don't worry about it.
That's kind of what I was referring to about when you query it, suddenly it realises that it's given you incorrect information.
Yes.
I had one just before we go to Jonathan. In fact, I nearly got stuck with no clothes for this weekend because I had a suitcase which was brand new and I haven't yet found a way to mark up the combination lock, and the combination got shifted and I couldn't unlock my suitcase. So I thought, that's okay, I've got a number of different AI assistants and I've got a session coming up on Sunday, we can talk about this. Mm-hmm. All of the AI assistants stated very clearly the lock is set to 000. When I queried it, it actually did argue with me for the first time ever. It said, no, it's definitely set to 000. I got my youngest daughter on the phone and it was set to 475.
Yeah.
Jonathan, surely you've got a nice, amusing one for us.
Yes, and I guess that's just a point, a great example of when to know what the right tool is for a situation. Sometimes it's a robot, sometimes it's your child. but two little ones, both wonderful examples from my Meta glasses. I asked it to describe my support worker's car, and it said that it had recently been in an accident.
Said what?
Badly damaged. It was actually just dirty. he washed his car after that.
I bet he did.
Yeah. But also, it lied about almost the entire restaurant menu, and I really wanted those lamb cutlets so badly. And they were just so confused, the people, because I kept saying things that did not exist. You just know that you could end up in very awkward situations. If you really want some food, just check. It's really available before you try.
Just don't ask for lamb cutlets.
Yeah.
Jonathan, Craig and McCurran, thanks very much for joining us on this session. I'll hand you back to Helen.
Thank you.